This week on Vaticano, meet the 21 new cardinals that Pope Francis has created. Learn about the new revelations from the Vatican archives that shed more light on the actions of Pope Pius XII during World War II. Travel to Marseille to look back on Pope Francis's historic papal trip and learn about the plight of migrants crossing the Mediterranean. Vaticano starts now. On September the 30th, Pope Francis celebrated his 9th consistory in 10 years of his pontificate. By choosing to celebrate the consistory in September, Pope Francis focused attention on the Synod on Synodality, as many of the new cardinals hail from the peripheries of the Church. Of the 21 new cardinals, 18 are under the age of 80 and would be eligible to vote in a papal conclave. With his latest consistory on September the 30th, there are 137 cardinal electors and 107 non-electors for 243 total cardinals. Pope Francis has appointed 99, or 72%, of the 137 cardinals under 80 years of age who are allowed to vote in a papal conclave. That's well above the ceiling of 120 set by Pope Paul VI, but which has already been surpassed on several occasions by both John Paul II and Benedict XVI. Statistics at the end of September will mean Europe will have 53 electors, including 15 Italians, 15 electors from North America, 11 from the USA, 4 from Canada, 24 electors from Latin America, 19 from Africa, 23 electors from Asia, and 3 from Oceania. The new cardinals include the prefects of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, Archbishop Victor Manuel Fernandez, of the Dicastery for Bishops, Archbishop Robert Francis Prevost, and of the Dicastery for Oriental Churches, Archbishop Claudio Guggerotti. The Pope has also named Bishop Stephen Chow Sao Yan of Hong Kong and the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Monsignor Pier Battista Pizzaballa. Three of the new cardinals will be over the age of 80. Pope Francis has broken with tradition in these appointments by ignoring archbishops who occupy sees that traditionally had cardinals, Milan, Venice, and Los Angeles among them, and instead appointing bishops from little-known dioceses around the world, such as Mongolia, Sudan, and San Diego. In making cardinals, Pope Francis has looked for bishops who are pastoral and close to the poor and marginalized. Because of these choices, Pope Francis has dramatically changed the geographical breakdown of the Electoral College. At the 2013 conclave that elected him, 52% of the electors were from Europe. After the September consistory, only 39% will be European, the lowest percentage ever. At 86, Pope Francis is now the oldest reigning pope in 120 years, since Leo XIII died at the age of 93 in 1903. With this most recent consistory, the Holy Father is clearly looking to the future and the next conclave. Recently uncovered correspondence sheds light on the actions of Pope Pius XII during World War II, suggesting that he possessed detailed information, courtesy of a trusted German Jesuit, of up to 6,000 Jews and Poles daily in German-occupied Poland. This documentation challenges the Holy See's previous argument that it couldn't confirm diplomatic reports of Nazi atrocities and thus couldn't denounce them. These newly revealed documents, which have been made public by the Italian daily Corriere della Sera, are poised to reignite the ongoing debate surrounding Pope Pius XII's legacy and the campaign for his beatification. Historians have long been divided over Pius's actions during the Holocaust, with some supporters contending that he engaged in quiet diplomacy to save Jewish lives, while critics argue that he remained silent as the Holocaust unfolded. One significant document published by Corriere della Sera is a letter dated December 14, 1942, authored by a German Jesuit priest named Father Lothar Konig. This letter was addressed to Father Robert Leiber, the personal secretary of Pope Pius XII and also a German national. In his letter, Konig informed Leiber that credible sources had confirmed the horrific daily deaths of approximately 6,000 Poles and Jews in SS furnaces at the Belzec concentration camp in southeastern Poland. The timing of Konig's letter is noteworthy, as it suggests that this trusted Jesuit correspondent's message reached Pope Pius XII shortly after the ghetto had been emptied. This occurred following multiple diplomatic notes and visits from various foreign envoys, starting in August of 1942, during which reports indicated that up to 1 million Jews had already been killed in Poland. The legacy of Pope Pius XII and the revelations stemming from the newly opened Vatican archives will be the focal point of a major conference scheduled to take place at Rome's Pontifical Gregorian University next month.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. Pope Francis's new document on the environment will be called Laudate Deum, which means praise God in Latin. It will be, he said, a look at what has happened and say what needs to be done. The Holy Father announced last month he would be releasing a follow-up document to the 2015 encyclical Laudato Si, and that it would be published on October 4th, the feast of St. Francis of Assisi. The Vatican announced that two bishops from mainland China have been added as official delegates in the upcoming Synod on Synodality Assembly. Bishop Antonio Yao Shun of Jining and Bishop Joseph Yang Chuangkeng of Xuzhan will travel from China to Rome to participate as full members of the October 4th to 28th Synod. One day after Azerbaijan launched a new military operation against Nagorno-Karabakh, Pope Francis made a public appeal for both sides to silence the weapons. The pontiff said that he was troubled by the news he received on September 19th from Nagorno-Karabakh, where, and I quote, "the already critical humanitarian situation is now aggravated by further armed clashes." Nagorno-Karabakh is a disputed region in Azerbaijan that is home to about 120,000 Armenian Christians. Since the attack, thousands of them have fled their ancestral homeland in the region of Nagorno-Karabakh, and more are expected. Pope Francis has called for abuse crimes to be examined in the larger context as well. In a meeting with a delegation from the Latin American Research and Training Commission for the Protection of Minors, he said, "The abuses that have affected the church are but a pale reflection of a sad reality that involves all of humanity, and to which the necessary attention is not paid." Concluding his address, Pope Francis invited everyone to pray through the intercession of St. Thérèse of Lisieux so that those who commit these crimes may be converted and see in their victims the eyes of Jesus. Pope Francis has awarded a UK church co-cathedral status, making it the first of its kind in the history of the British Isles. The Church of St. Mary of the Isle, located in Douglas on the Isle of Man, has achieved this rare status after Douglas was formally recognized as a city during the late Queen Elizabeth II's Platinum Jubilee celebrations in June 2022. St. Mary of the Isle will be a co-cathedral along with Liverpool's Metropolitan Cathedral of Christ the King. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Matthew Santucci for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Dinanzi a noi c'è il mare, fonte di vita.
Before us is the sea, a source of life, yet this place evokes the tragedy of shipwrecks, which cause death.
According to the UN Refugee Agency, about 178,500 migrants have come to Europe in the year to date via the Mediterranean, while about 2,500 died or went missing on the way. More than 20,000 people have died on Mediterranean migration routes since 2014. Pope Francis was in Marseille, a coastal city in the Provence region of southern France, to participate in the Mediterranean Encounter, the Rencontre Méditerranéenne, a week-long gathering of young people with bishops from 30 countries focused on migration issues. Pope Francis's trip to Marseille began on Friday at the Basilica of Notre-Dame de la Garde, where he entrusted a meeting of Mediterranean bishops and youth to the Virgin Mary. Pope Francis encouraged the 119 priests of the Archdiocese of Marseille, who serve approximately 742,000 Catholics, to take Mary and her gaze as an example for their priesthood.
We can no longer watch the drama of shipwrecks caused by the cruel trafficking and the fanaticism of indifference.
Indifferenza diviene fanatica.
Pope Francis on Saturday, September the 23rd, told an interreligious youth conference in Marseille, France, that the migrant crisis unfolding in the Mediterranean calls for a collaborative response.
The exchanges that have taken place between peoples have made the Mediterranean the cradle of civilization, a sea overflowing with treasures. Our sea, Mare Nostrum, is a place of encounter. It has conveyed to the world the lofty values of the human being, endowed with freedom, open to the truth, and in need of salvation, who sees the world as a wonder to be discovered and as a garden to be inhabited under the imprint of a God who makes covenants with men and women.
Che stringe alleanze con gli uomini.
Pope Francis chose to come to Marseille because he has long preferred traveling to the world's fringes rather than to its power centers. Marseille is a sprawling city of about 870,000 people. It's France's second largest city. It's plagued by pockets of extreme poverty, strained social services, and violence. But it's also one of France's oldest and most cosmopolitan cities, a predominantly working-class patchwork of ethnic and religious communities.
The Mediterranean mirrors the world, with the south turning to the north, with many developing countries plagued by instability, regimes, wars, and desertification, looking to those that are well off in a globalized world in which we are all connected, but one in which the disparities have never been so wide.
After his address at the youth conference, he met with French President Emmanuel Macron at the Palais du Faro, where they discussed the migration issue.
Bonjour, Marseille. Bonjour, la France.
Tens of thousands of faithful were drawn on Saturday to Marseille's famed Vélodrome soccer stadium. French church authorities estimated the crowds in the stadium at 57,000 people.
Le nostre città metropolitane.
Our major cities and many European countries like France, where different cultures and religions coexist, are a strong force against the excesses of individualism, selfishness, and rejection that generate loneliness and suffering.
Solitudine and difference.
Willkommen hier in Rom im Augustinianum.
Welcome to Rome at the Augustinianum, where the Ratzinger Schülerkreis and the new Schülerkreis of Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI, is once again meeting for its annual symposium, now for the first time after the death of Pope Benedict XVI.
Bei mir ganz herzlich begrüßen darf ich Erzbischof.
I would like to welcome Archbishop Dr. Georg Ganswein, his private secretary for many years.
Thank you.
Bei diesem Symposium geht es um das Vermächtnis.
This symposium is about the legacy of Pope Benedict XVI. You accompanied him intensively for almost two decades. When you think of a person's legacy above all things, you often think back to the last words he spoke. Benedict's nurse, Fra Eligio, conveyed those last words to you. What were his last words, and what did you think when you heard them?
Gedacht, als Sie die gehört haben.
Ich habe sie nicht gehört, Sie haben völlig recht, Herr Rothweiler. Es war so, dass am Morgen des
It was on the morning of December 31st.
Dezember, Fra Eligio mir sagte,
Fra Eligio said to me, "Can I tell you something?" Then he says he had the night watch. It was a very restless night. And around 3 a.m., all of a sudden, Benedict says three words in Italian.
Signore, ti amo.
And after that, he was very quiet. Fra Eligio told me, and I wanted to tell you this, because I think it is important, and so that you know what I heard. Nobody else heard it. This is not only impressive, it is ultimately the seal, so to speak, on Benedict's life, on both his intellectual life and on his spiritual life. These are not two parallel tracks, but two realities in one. At the end of his long life, his really intense life, there are these words. He was still able to say these words. That is very important.
What did this remind you of, these words? Lord, I love you.
Whoever knew Joseph Ratzinger, the theologian, the bishop, the cardinal, the pope, and has heard his sermons, read his letters, documents, and books, has noticed that one of the common threads in his theological life is love. The fact that he can say this sentence at the end of his life, in the last minute, is ultimately also a mission. I also felt that way. It is a gift. It is a message. But it is also a mission and a confirmation that one of these basic ideas of his theology has actually found a conclusion through his life.
Benedict's spiritual testament ends with an appeal. He calls us, "Stand firm in the faith. Do not be irritated." We live in a time of disorientation. What would he recommend to the faithful? What do we need to do in order not to be irritated?
Was müssen wir tun, um uns nicht leicht irritieren zu lassen?
Er hat ja, Sie haben es angesprochen.
He said in his spiritual testament that in his long life as theologian, there were a lot of theses and antitheses. Some theses were presented with so much conviction, as if what the Church teaches in the Creed was no longer true or simply outdated. Then came other theses, claiming the opposite, and so on. The bottom line is, by whom do I allow myself to be led? Do I believe that the Holy Spirit, who is promised to us, that he also works in the Church, and that the Church is stronger against all odds, even against the Zeitgeist, and keeps us in the truth? For me, the decisive thing has become and remains that I actually adhere to the wisdom of the Church, to the credo of the Church, to the faith of the Church, because that gives me security and guidance through my own life.
Und Geleit gibt durch mein eigenes Leben.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. The Holy Mayor. This is how Venerable Giorgio Lapira, mayor of Florence for two terms between 1951 and 1965, is remembered. Born in Pozzallo in 1904, a very small town in Sicily, Giorgio Lapira is considered one of the greatest exponents of social Catholicism.
Lapira era convinto che non si potesse fare una buona società.
La Pera was convinced that a good society could not be made if it was not founded on a high spirituality. His first conferences were called the Conferences of Christian Civilization, and in fact, he thought that only Christian spirit could inspire a just society. And for that, it was necessary to bring back a strong spirit of religiosity within a world that at that time was dominated by materialism, the historical materialism of the communist world and the practical materialism of the capitalist world.
Raised in a modest Sicilian family, he began his university studies in law in Messina. A little later, he moved to the University of Florence, where he graduated in Roman law in 1926. That's the same university where 8 years later, he obtained the chair of Institutions of Roman Law. At the same time that he was completing his studies, he deepened in his faith, entering the convent of San Marco in Florence as a Dominican tertiary. He became involved in Florentine Catholic Action by initiating the Mass of the Poor, a Eucharistic celebration dedicated to the poor, in which at the end of the celebration, La Pira lingered with them to give both financial and spiritual support.
At the end of Mass, he would talk with the poor about the problems of the world. He would talk with the poor he had gathered around him, and he would bring down to earth, in a simplified dimension, the problems political statesmen deal with, such as global peace. And he included the poor in that dialogue, because these are problems that concern everyone.
In 1939, he distanced himself from the fascist regime. He founded the anti-fascist magazine entitled Principles, aimed at defending the value of the human person and freedom of expression. The following year, the totalitarian government suppressed the magazine, and Giorgio La Pira was forced to go into hiding and leave the city. He returned to Florence only at the end of World War II. In 1946, he was elected a deputy at the Constituent Assembly and was called to formulate the basic principles of the Constitution of the Italian Republic.
This doctrinal preparation of his can be seen in his service to society as a constituent father. That is, one of those who was called to write the Italian Constitution. He made a decisive contribution that you can see in the first 15 articles of the Constitution, which are precisely the ones that speak on the fundamental rights of the dignity of the person.
La Pira, in 1952, organized the first international conference for peace and Christian civilization. From it began an activity aimed at promoting lively and profound contacts among political leaders from all countries of the world. La Pira concretized his desire for world peace in 1955, when the mayors of the capitals from around the world signed a pact of friendship and peace in Palazzo Vecchio, the seat of the municipality of Florence.
He has always been committed to the poorest of the poor, as if he was the father of the family of this city, which was his city, Florence. He also always took care of his religious dimension, and this religious dimension informed his relationship with others.
Giorgio La Pira died in Florence on November the 5th, 1977. He's remembered by all as the Holy Mayor. Pope Francis, in 2018, declared him venerable, thus concluding the second phase of his cause of canonization that started in 1986.